Last week, I used this program to discuss Veterans Day, stating that it was, at the time, our next big holiday. I also alluded to the fact that I have a level of disdain for trotting out Christmas stuff in the hours, literally, following Halloween. That's because I do think we rush things just a bit, and isn't life traveling along fast enough anyway? By barreling along towards Christmas while not really paying heed to other holidays that happen first. For example, the next major holiday in front of us isn't Christmas, but Thanksgiving, set to happen next Thursday. Thanksgiving happens to be my favorite holiday, for a host of reasons. As it is my favorite, and it's undeniably our next big holiday, I'd like to take some time today to consider ideas, history, and items related to Thanksgiving. Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. My memories of Thanksgiving run exceedingly deep and are inextricably linked to my grandparents, whom I've spoken about on this program before. But my numerous early memories of Thanksgiving extend beyond them as well, as I'm sure such memories do for many of you. I can clearly remember activities and lessons in school, tied to the Pilgrims, and images of the first Thanksgiving, and making little construction paper turkeys, using our hands as an outline. As always, there's more to the story than what you learn in a first grade class, but that doesn't diminish the depth of what I remember about those early days in my life. To somewhat kick things off with a tie to the outdoors and wildlife, this being field notes and all, if not necessarily something in Alaska, let's consider what will be the centerpiece of next Thursday's meal for most people, the turkey. What you will eat will almost certainly be a domesticated bird, perhaps a butterball from the local store. Domesticated birds descended from wild ones, with most sources giving credit to the Aztecs of Mexico and other Central American tribes for domestication of the wild variety. For what it's worth, domesticated birds can be found around the globe, thanks in large part to the Spaniards and other such European explorers. But wild turkeys are a North American original. And wild turkeys are what was brought to the inaugural Thanksgiving, that harvest festival held sometime during the fall of 1621, that included what we call the Pilgrims and a large contingent from the local Wampanoag tribe that played a key role in the survival of the Pilgrims who were present. There were a lot of types of foods present at that festival, which actually spanned several days. According to William Bradford and Edward Winslow, two men who were present at that celebration and kept journals about the early days of that colony, some of the foods that were served included corn, breads, deer, waterfowl, and turkeys. In fact, some of Bradford's exact words include, "And besides waterfowl, there was a great store of wild turkeys." So, turkeys it was, and turkeys it still is. Let me share a bit about the wild types that they feasted on back then. Wild turkeys are a large game bird, found in fairly large numbers throughout all parts of the lower 48, Central America, and extreme southern Canada. They were also transplanted to Hawaii back in the 1950s. The only state without wild turkeys is ours, one of the few real sadnesses in my life because I enjoy hunting turkeys. If your image of a turkey is of a big fat bird that somewhat waddles around a farmyard looking proud of itself, well, put that image out of your head. Wild turkeys are sleek, alert, and built for both speed and survival. Their senses, most of them anyway, have been keenly honed through generations of evading a host of larger predators, to include man. Wild turkeys can be 3 to 3.5 feet in length, with a wingspan approaching 5 feet. They weigh anywhere from about 10 pounds to well over 20. The males, called toms, are larger than the hens. Even though there are some differences in coloration amongst the different subspecies, in general turkeys have a large brown to black colored body, the feathers of which can have a prominent green iridescence. The wing feathers are heavily barred in a white or cream color. The tail feathers are large and brown and are tipped with a band of black, topped by a second band of brown. The legs are long and powerful and a grayish red in color. Toms have a rearward pointing spike on each lower leg called a spur, and these spurs can be well over an inch long on mature males. The heads and necks are featherless. The head on a tom is a blue-gray and covered in fleshy red or pink bumps called caruncles, and even larger ones on the neck called wattles. They also have a red protuberance called a snood that hangs down from around the beak. The beak on both sexes is a dingy yellow in color. One other odd distinguishing trait is that toms have beards. Beards are a cluster of thick, hair-like feathers that grow out from the center of the chest. They're quite noticeable on mature birds. Beards on a mature tom can be a foot or more in length. Hens look similar with regards to their body colors, but most hens don't have beards, and their heads are a bluish-gray. A lot of folks consider wild turkeys to be ugly birds. I guess for myself, I would say that they're a pretty bird, in an ugly sort of way. Turkeys are omnivorous and opportunistic. Some of the many menu items, depending on where they live, include acorns, nuts, seeds, berries, grasses, roots, and insects. They also will occasionally eat amphibians and small reptiles, such as lizards and snakes. They are fond of agricultural fields after harvest, and will even come to bird feeders in suburban settings. In Kansas, during the early parts of the spring hunting season, they can be found in alfalfa fields feeding heavily on early hatches of beetles and grasshoppers. Unlike their domesticated brethren, wild turkeys can and do fly, though they much prefer to run from danger. They're extremely cautious birds, which makes hunting them challenging. They have no sense of smell, but their hearing and eyesight are simply off the charts. So that's what the pilgrims were munching on. Again, that bird you plan to consume next week will likely be a domesticated bird. And make no mistake, it was raised to be a better eating bird. Turkey is, in my humble opinion, very good table fare, and every year I find myself thinking, gee, we should fix turkey more often than just Thanksgiving. Though, seldom does that actually happen. Maybe in 2019, I should make a New Year's resolution, eat more turkey. But I digress. Thinking about how they actually got those turkeys, and because I always have hunting on the brain, it's probable that some were supplied by the Wampanoags using bow and arrow. It's something of a popular, likely misconception that the pilgrims used a type of firearm called a blunderbuss. Frequently, you'll see caricatures of pilgrims holding these guns. A blunderbuss was a type of firearm that had a large flared end to its barrel that made it look something like a band instrument, at least in caricature form. It was loaded with shot, like a shotgun, and the flared opening made for easy loading, but because of that same opening, the blunderbuss was a decidedly short-range weapon. Accuracy was not one of its best characteristics. The pilgrims brought with them an assortment of firearms, but there isn't any evidence that any blunderbusses were amongst those weapons. Most of the firearms of the Plymouth colony were smooth-bore muskets and fowling pieces of an early flintlock design, along with a few pistols. Even so, hunting back then was likely a very short-range affair, irrespective of what type of gun was used. I would suppose if eating depended upon your success, you probably got pretty good at it, in short order. That first celebration, as mentioned, was a multi-day affair and happened in 1621. We're not certain of the exact timing, but almost certainly it was before November. Similar festivals happened across the years that followed and in other colonies, though not always with any consistency. President George Washington proclaimed the first nationwide Thanksgiving celebration in America on November 26, 1789, marking it as a day of public thanksgiving and prayer to be observed by acknowledging with grateful hearts the many and signal favors of Almighty God. In the years that followed, other such days came and went around the states. Over 70 years later, in 1863, President Abraham Lincoln called for an official Thanksgiving holiday in all states by way of a presidential proclamation, and it more or less gained traction as a national holiday after the end of the Civil War. In 1939, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed a presidential proclamation, moving it to the fourth Thursday of November as the official date. And so it is, we find ourselves now on the cusp of another Thanksgiving holiday. My hope for those of you listening is that you enjoy a very happy, safe Thanksgiving. Take the time to consider the things in your life for which you are grateful. For me, at the very top, it's my faith, my family, and my friends, followed by an abiding gratitude for where I live and the passions, interests, and experiences that I get to count as a part of my life. I don't know what your holiday will look like, but mine kicks off Sunday, with a large Thanksgiving meal at our church, an annual kind of thing that follows the morning service, with yours truly as the cook. Next week, it will be a similar meal, but on a smaller scale, to include family and friends on the actual day of Thanksgiving. We are a long ways from the shores of what would become Massachusetts in the early 1600s. We have a magnificent home and life here on the shores of Bristol Bay. Take the time next week to express gratitude for the good things in your own life. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.